This is Detective Molly Dahl, D-A-U-L, DPSST number 28647. It is January the 8th, 2009. It is 2:12 p.m. I am in a conference room on the Detective Division floor. Present with me is... and Slavica Bubic.
Bubic.
From our sexual assault detail advocacy program. And we are going to start this interview with Ms. reading a statement, but prior to her beginning that, could I get your full name and could you spell it, please? And can you spell your last name, please? And your date of birth? And would you prefer that I call you Ms. Hagen?
Fine.
Okay. And what's your current address?
Mailing or living?
Mailing. And a phone number to reach you. Okay, we are going to have a timeout. Okay. We're here again. It's 2:16 p.m. on January 8th, 2009, and once again, it's Detective Dahl in the small conference room on the Detective Division 4 with, and I'm going to get this right, Slavica Bubic.
Yes.
Haha, I got it. From our sex crimes advocacy program. And you have a statement there that you would like to read us. Whenever you're ready, go on ahead.
Okay. I am an LMT, a licensed massage therapist, number 4. Excuse me. I came to do an in-room licensed therapeutic massage on Al Gore on October 24th, 2006 at the Hotel Lucia in Portland, Oregon, as requested by Mr. Gore via the Hotel Lucia and its front desk clerk. During the course of this was by telephone that they requested me. During the course of this massage session, Al Gore did sexually assault me in his room. I have been a licensed massage therapist for about 12 years. Excuse me. And I have a professional diploma from the Oregon School of Massage and completed extensive training at Northwest Acupressure Institute and some preliminary Chinese medicine studies at the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine and elsewhere. I received my BS in liberal studies in 2002 at PSU. This is just stuff that was already in this.
Okay.
Most all of my undergrad work was in several years before double majoring in technical journalism with a minor in animal sciences, science education, and religious studies, during which time I was inducted into the Society of Professional Journalists, Sigma Delta Chi. I have an office at... I scheduled 4 massages in my office and have done outcalls to select fine hotels in Portland. My practice is one of professionalism and excellence in massage and body work, practiced in the highest ethical standards as set by the Board of Massage Examiners of the State of Oregon, as well as other professional organizations to which I belong. During a massage session, the client is always appropriately draped. Disrobing and re-robing of a client is done in the client's privacy when I am scrubbing and washing my hands and arms in the bathroom prior to and at the end of a massage. I have established a careful routine to preserve privacy and modesty as regards to my client. I'm very careful about draping techniques. When I meet a new client, the licensing board for LMTs in Oregon requires that I ask some cursory questions regarding the person's health history, which I always do. There are certain medical histories whereby some kinds of massage are contraindicated, such as in the case of cancer patients. On the evening of the incident, I received a cell phone call from the Hotel Lucia. I was asked if I had an availability in my schedule for a massage at 10:30 p.m. that evening for a guest of the hotel. I indicated that I did and would be finishing from another massage at another downtown hotel around 10 p.m. And that would have been the Hilton Tower. The hotel then indicated that it was a VIP and discussed with me a different type of billing arrangement than the usual that happens at the Lucia, usual being that the guest pays me directly. I've had, as clients, a number of VIPs over time, for example, NBA players, actors, rock stars, musicians, and the like. The Hotel Lucia said that the VIP was Al Gore and he was registered there as Mr. Stone. The date of this incident is 10/24/2006. I apologize.
Okay. Take your time. Take a drink if you need.
It's the lemon and the cheese together. In preparing for my appointments that evening, I wore long black pants and a black sleeveless shirt over another black camisole shirt, some flat saltwater black sandals and simple earrings and necklace with my hair pulled up and coiled back in a knot, with a black hair accessory, which is my usual professional attire. Black hides the oil stains that may get on my work clothing in the course of my workday, keeping me looking fresh and professional. And I use my elbows in my work on clients in rooms that are often warm, hence the sleeveless shirts. Many people who travel by air frequently, such as pilots that I've worked on, have physical distress, soreness, and stiffness in the back, neck, legs, buttock muscles, and more from sitting for a long time in an airplane. Also, some traveling clients seek massage to deal with emotional and therefore physical stress from their jobs and the stress of traveling so much for their work. Very rarely, almost never, do clients make innuendo to me. And I set a professional atmosphere from the beginning of walking into a room for a session. Sometimes part of the job is being sort of an informal counselor in terms of empathetic listening and processing with the client. I have a well-versed background and training to informally attend to these issues from university-level psychology classes, Jin Shindo training, spiritual training, other training, and the continuing education classes I regularly accrue to be in compliance with my licensure. I went to the hotel for my appointment with Mr. Stone, quote-unquote, Al Gore, at 10:30 p.m. I brought with me my own equipment consisting of a folded-up portable massage table and a fleece table pad for under the linens in a Zip Cordura case on a rolling massage table cart with saddlebags attached, carrying clean linens, massage butters and balms, my portable iPod speaker, and iPod for relaxing massage music. The front desk staff told me he wasn't going to be ready or available until 11 p.m., so I had to wait for him. I went downstairs to the basement level of the hotel lobby to use the ladies' room there and to relax between appointments and to have some quiet away from the noise of the lobby before the appointment. The front desk staff seemed especially verbally enthused over this guest and my upcoming appointment with him, and I did not want to engage in banter or questions with others about my upcoming client out of a sense of the privacy of good professionalism. I was personally pleased to be doing this VIP appointment, as I thought it to be an indicator of the growth of my practice and fruition of my seeds of marketing with the hotel industry in downtown, which I'd worked very hard at in the past few years. His room, the gallery suite, 903, was on the ninth floor at the very end of a hall, with many room doors on either side of the hall as one walked towards his door. It was a suite of two rooms and at least two bathrooms, and had a gas fireplace, a wet bar, conference table, sofa, chairs, and a bedroom with furnishings. I'm going to try my new glasses here. I just got them the other day. I'm not used to them yet, so bear with me if I can't read through them. I knocked on the door. Al Gore opened the door, and I introduced myself, saying, "Hello, I'm your massage therapist. How shall I call you?" He answered, "Call me Al." with a big smile as he stretched out his arms to wrap me into an embrace as a greeting in the inner entryway of the room as I stepped inside. He was wearing a long-sleeved dress shirt, it was a medium bright blue, I think, open at the collar, and dark pants, which were slacks, I think. The hug went on a bit long, and I was taken just a bit aback by it. If it weren't Al Gore, I would have seriously been questioning the situation right there, because a hug from an unknown male client before the session is a bit odd and unprofessional by typical LMT business standards. And the hug seemed a bit just a friendly hug. However, because he was a VIP and a powerful individual, and the Hotel Lucia had made it clear to me by inference that they were giving him the royal treatment, quote-unquote, in terms of billing, their treatment of him, etc., as though we were all ambassadors of Oregon and Portland for this man and expected me to do the same, and I was very dependent on keeping the Lucia's guests happy as I drew much of my work from them, I graciously went along with it. I have worked with many different individuals of many different ethnic, cultural, and religious backgrounds with varied ways of greetings and goodbyes, etc. So I try to keep an open professional mind and a sense of, quote, the benefit of the doubt when called for and appropriate. I assumed he must be engaging in something like the, quote, new age politician in casual mode greeting the massage healer archetype model of behavior. And because he had been the VIP, kind of a beneficent patriarch thing going on, it seemed. It was apparent from the beginning that he had been drinking because he was at one point finishing off the end of a bottle of beer, although I cannot say whether he was drunk. I surveyed the two rooms briefly to determine which offered the maximum space and warmth, etc., for a massage session. He suggested the bedroom, but I chose the main room as it was larger. There's more room for me to move about the massage table during the massage without knocking into sharp corners of furniture, and it had the warmth and lighting ambiance of a gas fireplace, which is ideal for massaging near in the late part of October in Portland. As I began to unpack my things in order to set up for the session, such as table, linens, tools, and more, he began by dimming the lights way down to near darkness. I objected and told them to turn them up so I could see what I was doing, especially in setting up. Not infrequently, many people prefer lights dimmed for a massage or the room dimly lit, but this was unrealistically dimmed. I prefer and insist on enough light to safely determine any skin integrity, bruising, or varicosity issues on my clients before massaging a potentially afflicted area. And working in too dark of a room makes me sleepy anyway, besides the hazards of tripping on items unseen on the floor in often cramped hotel rooms cluttered with clients' personal belongings as I work around the massage table. And just an aside here, when I've worked side by side sometimes with other massage therapists, they've turned them way down, and I finally had to really put my foot down after I ended up in an open sore on a woman's leg that she didn't tell me about, you know, and I don't have gloves on. I was just like, I have to see. I am not touching what I can't see. It's I'm not putting my risk of my health on the table. So I was really adamant about that. And I don't want to go to sleep while I'm working. He talked with me about his tour, his travels, some small talk as I set up my massage table, linens, iPod, and massage butters, etc. He had gone into the other room, as it is a two-room suite with at least two bathrooms, to change into a bathrobe and came back out to talk while I was setting up. I verbally clarified for him that I was required by the State Board of Massage in Oregon that I am licensed by to verbally do a brief health review about his health history with him before the massage commenced. During that time, I also had the opportunity to review with him just what were his areas of physical distress or what he wanted the massage session to focus on, as I do with all clients per standards of professional massage. He described a grueling travel schedule over the previous week or two, mostly by air, and he said he needed his gluteus, hamstring, quadriceps, and adductors worked on, as well as his abdominal area besides his back and whole body. I inquired if this was due to the long flight hours, and he said yes. I mentally noted that a request for adductor work is a bit unusual, In the massage world, sometimes it is said to possibly, but rarely, be that it's a precursor to inappropriate behavior by a male client, but it's not necessarily out of the range of professional treatment. There are legitimate conditions for such requests, and I've had them.
And can you explain that in layman's term, the adductor, where that is on the body?
The adductor is the inside muscles of the thigh. If you're riding horse bareback, you've got to clench with your thighs to hang on. And the reason for this, I mean, besides that it's kind of a private area, but it's, I mean, there's lots of people that have had adductor work done. It depends on the context of who your clients are, who you are, what kind of work you do.
Thank you.
I've had clients over the years with legitimate requests for such. In my training in massage school, I was taught that a massage of the adductors could cause an involuntary erection in some rare cases. With no sexual intent or feeling in the client, it's rather an involuntary vascular phenomenon. So I gave it the benefit of the doubt. It was also unusual for someone to specifically request abdominal work in my long experience. You want me to clarify that for you?
Mm-hmm.
That the abdominal area, and a lot of massage therapists don't do it. A fair chunk of us do. I offer it to people because I do a thing called Shinate Song. But that's a place where people will often say no go. And also, when in the world of massage, as licensed by the State Board of Oregon, you're absolutely forbidden to even have the gluteal cleft exposed, your butt crack, your genital area. You can do breast massage if it's something, I'm trained to do it. I've had women with mastectomies, I've had women with mastitis and stuff like that. You have to have a reason. There can't be a sexual reason for any of this. And the abdominal area is a place where a lot of people keep, this is the emotional place. And then from the belly, you're getting down to the lower belly, then you're getting into the pubic crest area, things like that. One doesn't go there, you don't uncover that area and stuff like that. So people either love it or they hate it because it's vulnerable. It's a very vulnerable place. And you only need to rub your hands on a cat and get clawed once to figure that out. It makes sense. So, but I don't really get people ever asking, do my abdominal. In hindsight, do my abdominal and my adductors, it's like, okay. But, he did fly in planes more than most people. And I've had many pilots come in and say, I hope you don't think I'm a pervert, but I really won't need you to work on my buttocks. I'm so sorry. I'm like, do you fly planes? Yeah. Are you a pilot? Yeah. I'm like, no problem. Because they're in misery because the glutes are huge muscles that experience a lot of trauma from flying for hours. And actually, the pilots have the same seats we do. And they're in charge of the planes. Isn't that horrible? Okay. I cannot begin to imagine that such a public figure who was married with a very public life with his wife and had books published about family life and relationships with his spouse, and who was on some book or film tour of an altruistic environmental nature, would be anything less than a model of stellar integrity. I had even voted for him in the last election, although in truth I was more accurately voting against Bush, almost regardless of who was his opponent. So I told Gore I would go wash my hands in the bathroom adjoining the room in which the massage was to take place and give him the privacy to please disrobe and climb on the table face down with the top sheet covering him, and then I would alert him before I came into the room so I could make sure he was on the table and appropriately draped, his modesty preserved. And I usually am like going, are you ready? And knocking on the door. He got onto the massage table, which was set up by the gas fireplace. I mean, he had also said, why don't we do the bedroom? I said, no, this is so much better. I'm going to set up out here. It's the fireplace. And you go, okay. So I knocked from inside the bathroom door and called out to ask him if he was ready, to which he replied that he was. And I then came back out of the bathroom and into the room where he was lying face down on the massage table, appropriately draped, and I placed a pillow under his ankles for a bolster to take the strain out of the lumbar region of his back, and I started with Swedish and other therapeutic massage techniques on his back and worked on his limbs, hands, legs, feet, and neck as well before eventually carefully arranging the linens to allow for him to turn over on his back while remaining discreetly draped. At all times, I kept him appropriately draped except for the specific area of his body that I was working on. I need to ask you, have either of you ever had massage?
Yeah.
So then you're familiar with this. I have had to recount this to somebody who's never had a massage and they don't get it. So you understand what the massage therapist is doing with the sheet while you're rolling around, like a rotisserie under there, and we make a little tent for you. Okay. There are people that are like, what? So I'm glad to see that you're participating in massage. We'd like to hear that. Okay. While he was still face down, he suddenly asked me, what has become clear to you lately? I answered him, how much is enough? This is so foreshadowing, I have to laugh. It's like in a book. I said, how much is enough? And I elaborated on this idea a little bit. I added that the other thing that I've become clear on lately was, it's the little things that count or matter in the end that are the foundation of anything bigger anyway, so not to underestimate them. I asked him what he had become clear about lately himself, and he said, letting go of results. While he was still face down, when I began doing the requested abdominal work on him, he became somewhat vocal with muffled moans, etc., and he began demanding that I go lower and massaging on the abdominal area. I was shocked, and I did not massage beyond what is considered a safe non-sexual area of the abdomen. He further insisted and acted angry, becoming verbally sharp and loud. I went into much deeper shock as I realized it appeared he was demanding sexual favors or sexual behaviors. I decided to declare I got so freaked I just got, but I got a tiny bit mad under my terror. I decided to clarify things by asking him, as he angrily complained that I was not doing what he wanted, for him to show me exactly what he wanted me to do, such as wearing a massage. I said, well, why don't you show me? I thought, this is too nuts. He grabbed my right hand hard, shoved it down under the sheet to his pubic hair area, my fingers brushing against his penis, and firmly planted my hand on his pubic crest region and said to me, there, in a very sharp, loud, angry-sounding tone. This is all happening really fast, as you can imagine. Further yet into shock from both his demand and his angry, intimidating behavior, I subtly and slowly slid my hand up away from the area and told him it would be a counterproductive massage technique, as he had said that he'd wanted to unwind from stress and relax, and that it would get him too awake, I said euphemistically and diplomatically. I felt like I was dancing on the edge of a razor. He angrily raged in an accusatory and threatening confrontational tone. He bellowed at me, just scared the shit out of me. I mean, I had no idea. And I've never had a client yell at me, except for one who was brain injured and she was drunk, and I work with her all the time. She's a mess, but she's like 5 feet tall, and she'll cry. Okay, so he screamed at me. He goes, I'm not asking, imagine yelling. I'm not asking for you to do anything inappropriate. To which I replied in a softer, terrified, calming tone, no impropriety was inferred, sir. At this point, I was realizing just how crazy and insidious he was and how precarious my situation was when he said the aforementioned, even though he clearly wanted inappropriate touch. It's like to make your mind go nuts. He was moaning, groaning, moving, and acting in a very suggestive way. It was unreal. I never even had any of my hotel clients get angry, yell, or act out at me before. During the massage episode, I realized, much to my horror, that I was in the perfect storm and that I was in a room with someone who was Teflon-coated in terms of credibility and celebrity status, and my usual safety net idea in all hotel massages before this of being able to escape from such a potential situation a perverted or threatening behavior from a client, which would be terminate the massage and leave the room immediately for help from the front hotel desk, even running and or shouting for help in the hallway if deemed necessary, was completely worthless in this situation. It was no longer viable because I feared that if I ran for the door to get out, I could or would be violently accosted by some security detail for seeming to be hostile, inappropriate, insubordinate, or threatening to him, and I feared being tased or shot by them as a first and immediate response. I also feared that if I made dissent with Gore, I could be in danger of being falsely arrested for false allegations of alleged soliciting or even attempted assault in his efforts to do damage control, and I felt certain that any, even the smallest complaint from him to the hotel could also destroy my work-life reputation in all the hotels and hence do irreparable damage to my livelihood, not to mention damage my personal reputation, which I had spent years building with my livelihood. I felt very uncertain if I'd be able to get out of the room without being accosted by him anyway at this point. Does that all make sense to y'all?
Mm-hmm.
He then tried another tactic as though he had very suddenly switched personalities and began in a pleading tone, pleading for release of his second chakra there. There's so much tension being held. This was yet another euphemism for sexual activity he was requesting, put cleverly as though it were a spiritual request or something. I was further deeply shocked and repulsed as my realization of what was happening sunk in, and especially as my mind was now reeling from this absolute betrayal by someone I had inherently trusted as a good guy who cares about people, including me, because of his public persona. I decided to try for a change of energy to buy time until I could gracefully and safely end the massage and get out of the room, as I had already tried to do twice, and he insisted on more work and more inappropriate abdominal suggestions by using a type of acupressure technique on him, which can often relax a person so deeply that they may become very drowsy. I hoped I should have done a little Spock hold.
Pressure point.
I'm sorry, you passed me out? Oh, poor baby. I hoped it would both do so to him and take the wind out of his sails for sexual contact, and that it possibly could have. I hoped. I asked him if he would like to try a great acupressure technique for helping his tension, to which he enthused an affirmative response. His response made me guess that he probably thought it would further his sexual pleasure, but nothing could be farther from the truth. So I began doing this modality by touching him with semi-deep pressure from a couple of my fingertips and a specific pattern of therapeutic acupressure points on safe areas of his torso, shoulders, neck, and head, and eventually he seemed to be drowsing lightly on the table. Then I quietly told him again that the session was over and that I was going to go wash my hands and arms and give him privacy to get up off the table and re-robe, so that I could pack up my items and leave. This is the thing of also, like, I can get out, you save face, so you're not going to get violent with me, you know. When I came out, he was in his robe, and he complimented me on the session. I felt I could leave without further problems from him, but I was wrong in that surmising. I was freaked out and trying to act calm and collected so as not to look vulnerable and so as to keep any other weirdness from him from happening. He engaged me in small talk as I headed for my massage table to break it down, and he came over to where I was while I was trying to pack up. And then he wrapped me in an inescapable embrace as I turned around, giving this come hither look deep into my eyes and caressed my back and buttocks and breasts. I squirmed to try and get out of his grasp, telling him to stop, don't, several times, and I finally told him and said, "You're being a crazed sex poodle," hoping that he'd realize how weird he was being, yet he persisted. He was much stronger than me, bigger than me, and insistent. It was completely unnerving, and I realized that resistance was making him giggle and pursue more strongly. And I knew then that this, resistance, was a dangerous tactic to use if I wanted to avoid being raped. I had the fear that rape would be inevitable if I could not get out of the room, yet I could see no way to immediately leave without it also being a risk to my safety, because I felt he would use force to counteract forceful moves on my part. So I distracted him by pointing out the box of chocolates on the conference table. Chocolate's always a good distraction, right? He then approached the conference table in the room and opened up a box of moonstruck chocolates on the table, walking towards me with them, who made myself busy and occupied and hopefully seemed further unavailable by packing myself as fast as I could, and came very close to me with the box, offering me some while I kept gathering my items and packing. This was all happening much faster than the retelling of it would indicate. He insisted getting closer, so I took one to eat from his hand as he was holding up to me while he ate one, because I was afraid of him and I just wanted to keep him distracted to buy time in the hope he would change his mind and or I could figure out some other strategy. I hurriedly packed some more of my stuff, chatting fast and a lot, hoping it would keep him distracted. When I went to the conference table to get some more of my things sitting on it, he cornered me by it and the wall. Like, here's the conference, like, over. And he came before I could get away from there. And I used more conversation to keep him a bit distracted as I finished my gathering of items on the table there. He had me trapped in the corner. He started fondling me again, and I was terrified of his out-of-the-blue temper and unwillingness to let me go. In spite of my trying to pull away, I used humor to try and defuse the situation and allow him to save face with his ego to avoid his forceful temper and forcefulness, such as telling him he'd have to stop or I'd call in the chaperone, it's late, I'm tired. I took every opportunity to keep trying to remove myself from his advances and embraces and fondling. He had already opened a small bottle of Grand Marnier. I think he did this when he was with the chocolates, just like that. You know, they have these little complimentary bottles. And he poured it into a wine or brandy glass, after which, taking a sip, he pushed it to my lips as he cornered me with a big seduction smile. I don't drink. I'm allergic to alcohol. I did enough in college anyway. I pushed it away, saying, I do not drink liquor because of allergies. And he insisted, saying, come on, just taste it, and pushed it into my lips again, whereby I ended up sipping some. He then forced an open-mouth kiss on me, who was cornered by him, sticking his tongue into my mouth to French kiss me. I pushed back and said, stop it, you're being way too frisky. And I was distressed and shocked and terrified. You know, when he did the glass, then he put it into my hand. I'm holding it there like, okay, distraction, like we'll do the, you know. And then he had picked up a second glass. I was distressed, shocked, and terrified. He laughed, clearly enjoying himself at the expense of my discomfort, refusal, and fear. This was ever more disturbing and frightening to me as I saw he was determined to have a sexual act with me. At this time, he had been pressing his body up against mine, holding me tightly. And I was not certain if his robe was open or closed in the front. It seemed partway open, like the robes are small. He's rotund, you know. And I did not want to look down to see. I could feel what seemed to be an erection from him, lest he be further encouraged and aroused by seeing me look down. And I did not want to look anyway as he repulsed me. I definitely got the idea that he was used to having women throw themselves at him. Even one of the female front desk employees at the hotel was swooning about having met him to me just before I was to go up for the massage. There was a lot of excitement at the desk from the employees about Gore staying there and about me being sent up to massage him. It increased the job performance of the stress that I had. It seems that this business of ordering up a massage therapist at a hotel and then seducing her, forcing him or herself with, I gotta say something here. Originally wrote up a narrative and then he sent it to me and it was smaller than this, and I just, he said, please correct. So this part here came from the thing, because I don't even think I would put it in here, but I'm just,
okay.
Because I'm just looking like this isn't. But anyways, it seems that this business of ordering up a massage therapist at a hotel and then seducing her or forcing himself, his physical attentions on her, such as sexually assaulting her, seem to be a well-rehearsed routine for Gore. That I am licensed by the state of Oregon as a professional therapeutic body worker and had made that explicitly clear to him in the very beginning of the session did not even seem to matter with him or even register as noteworthy to him. This made the situation even more clearly frightening. It was very clear to me that I was not the first woman he had sexually assaulted, that clearly no was not a word he heard or cared about or respected. I was intimidated by him physically because he's a very large man, about the same height as me, maybe a little taller, but a lot heavier than I was and clearly much stronger. and he had a dramatic display of violent temper as well as extremely dictatorial commanding attitude besides his Mr. Smiley global warming concern persona. I did not want to get hurt and I did not want to get raped. At some point, he said the hotel had put condoms in the treat box. You know what treat boxes are in hotels? There was the hotel room treat box, the kind of thing, usually a basket that holds chips, cookies, teas, chocolates, etc., you commonly see in hotel rooms. And he said that the hotel had put condoms in it. He held up a small plastic case at me, and I was getting more deeply distressed by all this, and all I could think to say was to dispute that it was condoms. I just found this unbelievable because I didn't know that these were in the treat boxes. I probably stay in Motel 6 because they don't have these things. And I didn't have my glasses on, so it looked like one of those little plastic sewing kits to me. So the first thing I blurted out, I said, "It's a sewing kit." And I was trying to pack things from across the room, and it looked like one from that vantage point, and I was trying to distract him. So he demanded that I come over to the box to see. I'm nearsighted, I don't wear contacts, so I couldn't see it clearly, and I was taken aback that that was all I could say in the moment. I continued packing instead, and this sounds like this is going a long time. It's not. Does this make sense? You get a sense of the time warp?
Sure.
Because this sounds like this is just like hours, like moving a house, and it's not. And then when I got to the table where the treat box was, because I had to walk to grab some stuff because I'm almost out of here. All I could think of was like, get the stuff and look normal and walk out. Because if I looked anything other than normal, Freya's going to get grabbed, pinned down or something. I was in shock. I was really afraid of his temper. let's see. I saw to my surprise it was condoms sitting on the table as he had set them out, and I figured he must have used them at hotels like this before since he knew where to look for them. I told him, well, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't about the condoms. Something the effect of trying to, if he used them without saying with whom, everyone in the hotel would know he had had sex, implied about me, and he'd be exposed. And of course, if he didn't use them, then he would not be practicing safe sex if he had sex or forced sex with someone. I hope this would cause him to reconsider his intentions. Then I asked him how do you rectify this with your wife? Thinking this would cause him some remorse and mellowing, to which he angrily bellowed instead. Quick shift of mood again, which frightened me anymore. Yeah, I never saw anybody's moods just go like this. It made me go, this man should never be in charge of the red button. It would be really scary. His mood, he bellowed. He goes, I wasn't going to do anything. I mean, just screaming. More deeply frightened by his temper and the way he was suddenly stalking around like a dog with hackles up on his back, I started backpedaling with something everyone's relationship or marriage is a private affair. No one really knows for absolute certainty what is the true arrangement that was private with Bill and Hillary, for example, anyway, and that part's nobody's business, but they're all... I'm trying to fix things. I realize later, this is just a side, I really stepped in it, because the talk about Bill and Hillary is like a sore point with this guy, and I didn't know, so he's just like, and I'm like, you know, really freaked out. He seemed even angry at that point. Me with like terror and question marks, like, now what'd I say? I did not know what to do and grasp for something. I laugh about it now a little bit because I have some distance, but if I really have to get in here, this is why I'm reading it, because if I tell it, it's harder. I did not know what to do, and I grasped for something else to say to distract him away from that incendiary point. I was still unable to get out the door as he was between it and me, plus I had my stuff yet to finish dealing with. That was the part where it just felt sane, like if I just, you know how you keep trying, I'll just keep trying to act normal because you're in shock. He seemed to calm down after I quickly changed the subject to some other chatty-like conversation about my iPod. Again, he approached me and he grasped me and gave me a big tongue kiss. At this point, I was even more afraid of him physically, and I tried again hard to squirm away. He grabbed at my right camisole bra strap under and through the armhole of my sleeveless sweater and roughly tried to pull it down off me in an attempt to disrobe me, saying, "What's this?" I broke away from him and firmly, with even more distress again, said loudly, "Stop it!" And disturbingly, he giggled some more. He's getting off on it. All I could think of about was keeping him appeased in a conversational way and stall for time and try to get out of his room without eliciting further ire or giggling arousal in him. He insisted I look at his iPod as I was packing mine, telling me about his association with Apple, and told me to come into his bedroom where the iPod docking station was and listen to a song that he had mentioned by Pink about the current president, Bush, that would shock me. He was telling me about his tour and the musician connections he had, plus things about his iPod. I resisted, stalled, made excuses, but he pleaded and cajoled and guilt-tripped me, and then forcefully, loudly insisted and demanded and commanded that I accompany him to his bedroom where the iPod docking station was. He repeatedly assured me it would be okay in a reassuring and sort of apologetic tone, as though he was trying to have me given the chance to make up for being inappropriate and distressing me. I felt he would not take no for an answer after he raised his voice forcefully at me again, and I felt herded into the room. And was trying to keep the peace so I could then leave soon, with him having saved his own face as he acted like he was trying to do, without me enduring further harm. Oh, I have to go pee. Break time.
All right. Okay, we're going to continue with our interview. And I think you were talking about
being herded into the room, trying to keep the peace so I could leave soon, with him having saved his own face as he acted like he was trying to do, and without me enduring further harm. Does that sound like the last words I said?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So he sat down on the far side of his bed, away from the door, in his bedroom, near his pillows, and put the iPod on the bedside clock iPod dock that was located there, and padded the bed for me to sit down. Should I point to you how this looked?
No, I'll get that later.
I stood away from him in the room, a bit of distance from the end of the bed, and gave him a disapproving look and said I was fine standing where I was. He said that I couldn't hear from there and to just sit with him for a moment to hear the song, and patted the bedside again, reassuring me he just really wanted me to hear the song, that was part of his global warming tour somehow, inferring that it was now safe to sit by him as though we were friends. I stalled and I refused. He then angrily raised his voice and forcefully commanded me to come sit. I felt like Bambi in the headlights. I went into shock and I woodenly went and reluctantly sat gingerly on the edge of the bed. The song was Dear Mr. President by Pink. He said it was written to protest the current administration and that it has been or was going to be chosen to accompany some presentation of his, or a film, as were some other songs chosen by Melissa Etheridge. As soon as he had it playing, he turned to me and he immediately flipped me flat on my back and threw his whole body face down over atop me, pinning me down and outweighing me by quite a bit. "Get off me, you big lummox," I loudly protested to him, and I struggled with my whole body to shove him as hard as I could to roll him off me and get out from underneath him, and I using my whole left leg and stuff, and that's where I strained all the muscles, but I didn't realize it at the time. He just giggled and acted like I was only teasing him, and I had to physically struggle and wrench around to throw him off my body so I could stop being squashed and breathe again. I could not even breathe with him crushing me and my chest like that. I started to sit up and he tightly grasped my right wrist and hand, and we lay on our sides a couple feet apart looking at each other as he played the song, him singing along with it as if he were revealing deep feelings like some bizarre karaoke, and me stuck there staring at this unpredictable predator, wondering how to get loose and get away. I was terrified to struggle further because I felt like he would then force himself on top of me again. I did not know what to do next. I was just shocked at his craziness. I forced a smile and I just asked him with a quiet, sympathetic tone in my voice at that point. I just said, How long were you whacked out after the election? I just got to the point where I was like, to which he replied, 6.5 years so far, just giggling his head off, and then he went on singing to me. In this struggle, my left leg and knee sustained injuries for which I had obtained medical care for several months afterwards. I tried to remain in seemingly outer good humor throughout this, with still trying to convey to him some firmness of not wanting to engage in sexual activity with him, although the thought and total fear in my mind was that I was on the brink of being forcibly raped. I had to use comments like, "It's too bad we didn't meet in college when we were younger. That would have been more fun," to keep him distracted, and, excuse me for a minute, and to try and create a non-threatening reality check for him about the here and now, and avoid both his quick change of personality and his violent temper. What was really going through my mind at that point is that this guy's big, strong, demanding, insistent, seemed used to getting his way about everything and everyone liking him. He doesn't take no for an answer. He's demonstrated a violent temper, and that he could overpower me and rape me, and he is so insistent on trying to force a sexual encounter with me. So I tried to talk him down. I kept trying to talk to him, trying to defuse the situation and talk my way literally out the door unscathed. It seemed to me that the way he came across to me was like a scary, without a conscience, spoiled, out-of-control fraternity boy at a kegger type of person with a perverse sense of entitlement, a rich kid who's used to getting what he wants in whatever, including from hookers, from women fawning over him, and that he was used to money or power bailing him out of trouble. He had no fear of doing wrong or getting in trouble. He had nothing, it seemed, to fear or hold him at bay. He simply would not take no for an answer in anything, and I verbally told him no way more than once. My body language said no as well. I even said to him at one point, "Al, no means no," to which he just laughed and groped me some more. After a while, he sat up on the bed when I got my hand free from his, and I got off the bed first and was going to the other room to begin to finish packing up my stuff and go home. I must have been like trying to gather it. Before I could get away from his hand reach, he prevailed upon me to listen to just this one other song about women's feelings and their inner self and trust that he said his wife introduced him to, which is about a woman choosing to let a man into her deeper self or some such things. That's just unbelievable. He's trying every angle here. It's just like it's crap. I said, I really had to go. But he loudly demanded that I sit on the bed again, that forceful thing, grasped me by the arm. I did not struggle, afraid of eliciting more forcefulness from him. And I listened to the song, so I'm sitting again gingerly on the bed, my arm grabbed, listening and more of his singing while he ran his hand on my leg once or twice towards and in my crotch, or I slapped and moved away from there. He giggled each time like it was a game, getting more enthused while I got more scared. All the while he was singing the song to me while it played on the iPod, I kept saying, "I had to go, it's late. My mama raised me to be a good girl. I can't do this, I gotta go," and so on, trying to get him to relent without provoking a confrontation with him, who was so much larger and stronger than me. This was an apparent last-ditch effort to keep me in the bedroom so that he could try again. He kept trying to get to have sex with me, and I used humor and a sense of verbal gentle playfulness to slowly withdraw from the situation and keep him from becoming forceful, which I greatly feared. I also did not want him to realize how frightened I was, as I thought if he perceived my fear and hence my vulnerability, he might just use total force and overcome me quickly. I wanted him to perceive me as having some wherewithal and savvy and fight in me, a force to be reckoned with, while at the same time not appear confrontational so as not to raise his ire again, which also might make him move more forcibly on me. Since I was certain I would not be the victor in such a struggle, it was a nerve-wracking balancing act. I told him that I was sorry to disappoint him, but that he would just have to take matters into his own hands that night, that it was just too late at night, tired, etc., and maybe next time he's in town, perhaps things will work out to be earlier in the evening. He'd taken a business card of mine in regard to next time I told him anything I could think of to get out of there without being forced into further sexual activity. He pleaded, grabbed me, engulfed me in embrace, tongue-kissed me, massaged me, groped my breasts, and painfully squeezed my nipples through my clothing, pressed his pelvis against mine, rubbed my buttocks with his hands and fingers, and rubbed himself against my crotch, saying, "You know you want to do it," as I kept pulling and struggling and pulling away from him. This is when I'm up and trying to leave. I finally got out the door after being forcibly being pulled back in the room in the doorway by him a couple of times and trying to leave to be groped and fondled and have tongue kisses forced on me. This is what he's doing. And that's when he's saying, "You know you want to do it." And I was just thinking, oh my God. When I finally got away, I hurried down the hall to the elevator and went downstairs via the elevator, where I felt really shaky and faint. And I arrived quite shaken at the main lobby, where I could hardly think or write, yet I needed to scribble out a receipt for the hotel to get cash before I left. They had one receipt, they usually didn't, and I was just, you know. It was after 11, or it's after 1:30 a.m. There is a payment discrepancy issue. I've yet to be paid in full for my work, for my time, to add salt to the wound. I was too shaken to do the correct billing at the time. I told the staff I'd email a better copy in the morning. It was all I could do to keep from running out of the lobby in terror. I did not tell the hotel staff, as I could not imagine any support from them. Massage therapists have been shown to be expendable in a hotel who coddles its guests with an extreme form of "the customer is always right." The small group of LMTs that work the hotels and are also an extremely competitive, untrusting, and backfighting, infighting group, made more so in a feeding frenzy with not enough work to go around. Competition from deeply undercutting corporate massage exclusive contracts overtaking some hotels, and odd favors granted between hotel staff and some LMTs, plus the issue of graft. I learned to keep my business as much to myself as possible after a few networking forays amongst these individuals, which were full of bizarre drama, dishonesty, and more. So I did not confide in or look to any of them for support about this assault, as it would undoubtedly merely be turned into more cannon fodder to knock me off the work roster. These people will look for any way to knock anyone off the roster to gain more work for themselves. I was an outsider of sorts to begin with, as I came from previous hotel experience from elsewhere in the Portland area with other LMTs already working in the hotels, and I became a trusted therapist for the hotels on my own efforts and comprehensive background. Before I was working here, I was working down at Salishan on the weekends, and then I went, hey, I could do this in Portland, because my folks used to have a house down there. So, I later discovered, after discovering a meeting many of the other LMTs, that there was a discrediting innuendo being spread by a few other jealous therapists who had been in Portland longer and hated the competition that I seemed to them to have brought, and that I had twice or more as much training education experience as any of them. There was often innuendo being spread by certain therapists to hotels about all the other therapists and more. I was not the only one to be dissed. It was like dealing with junior high girls from shifting clique alliances. I ignored it as best I could and focused only on my business and my work. I drove to my home and I immediately called up a longtime trusted friend in Houston, Texas around 4 a.m. Central Time and woke him up to tell him what happened, as I was so shocked and freaked out. Later I went, and I took a long, long warm shower trying to wash off the unwanted touching and the trauma, and I brushed my teeth for a long time to get out the Grand Marnier and Al Gore's tongue and germs out of my mouth. I came home with this big Ghirardelli chocolate bar. He had also opened in the room and eaten some of the chocolate, and he'd later give me some later to eat, and he shoved the rest of the bar into my purse as I was packing up to go. It's packed up with the evidence stuff in the bank vault, with his fingers all over it. I noticed it in my purse as I looked for something else in it before I went to bed in the wee hours of the morning to try and sleep as best I could, freaked out as I was. As I took off my clothing, as I took off my clothing to go to the shower, I noticed some stains on the front of my black slacks. These were newer black slacks. That might have been the second time I wore them, so it's a thick, dressy Kosovic had warned him on a date, so I was trying to be like, I'm messed up. And I took them off and I said, what's those stains on the front of those? And I wondered if it was soap or bodily fluids from Gore pushing up against me repeatedly, because they're about here, holding me down, etc., with nothing on but his hotel-issued terry robe with a belt to hold it closed. I carefully hung them up and decided to be sure not to launder them until I knew more what to do with what had happened. Just my intuition. I washed the sheets I used with him during that session the next day. I remember lawyers yelling at me about that. I'm like, anybody could be getting bodily fluids on there. I don't prove a damn thing, you know? People lay naked on the table. Of course I washed them, but, you know, I don't... And I'm not a lawyer. I could see now what their logic was, but I'm like, no point to scold me. Okay, so I washed the sheets I had used with him during that session the next day, and a few times later considered throwing them out as the floral pattern Martha Stewart gave me flashbacks every time I saw it of that massage session. I instead donated them to someone in need. I did not immediately call the police, as I deeply feared being made into a public spectacle and my work reputation being destroyed. I was not sure what to tell them, and was concerned my story would not be believed since there was no DNA evidence from a completed act of rape. I did not even know what to call what had happened to me. I did not know if the police would even want to take a report on this. I was afraid of being believed. I was terribly confused and felt sickened and shocked. I was in very deep shock and felt frozen and shaken. And I didn't write this in, but one of the things I ended up doing, I was on the internet, I think it was the next day or something. I had to go, I can't see through these things, or reading glasses. When I could, I saw online where I could read and say, oh, it's called sexual assault. This is what happened to me. Whoa, this is a crime, you know. I had to look on the frickin' internet. But that's part of the shock. Because I think if I had a client come in, I would have been like driving them to the police. It's just this craziness. Is this normal?
Mm-hmm. It is normal. Okay. It's common that people be.
Well, what's not in here also is I called my friend and I told her what happened, and she went into the, oh, couldn't you have gotten out of the room? She just went into this whole thing of, you know, you could have gotten out of the room. It's because you had bad boyfriends the past, everything. And I got angry. I got furious. It about just split our friendship. And I got off the, I said, what? You know, I got furious and got off the phone. But I'm really grateful for that, because the anger knocked me out of the shock. And I said, take action. So I called the rape hotline. Much detail within about 72 hours of the Portland Women's at the Portland Women's Crisis Line, I began to thaw from some frozen feeling to one of anger, though I was still very scared and shocked. They urged me to report the incident to the police, but they did not know the name of the perpetrator yet, as I did not want to deal with the shock and awe response from them or anyone yet. When at last I finally told the name to the phone counselor from PWCL, she went totally silent for a minute, as though she might be thinking I was pulling a prank, and I felt very embarrassed until she stuttered out that she had voted for him herself and was clearly upset hearing this information. This is what's been really hard with this, because I live in the Birkenstock tribe, and it's like being the ultimate traitor. And by the by, there are people... one who is so black and white left wing, she ceased talking to me. Another one who was basically asking me to just suck it up, otherwise the world's going to be destroyed from global warming. And I was like, these are women. I'm like, where is the feminist in you? What the hell? This is not okay. If you can't trust this guy with this, how can you trust him with anything else? So... And that's just the tip of the iceberg of some of the shit I've been through. It takes it way beyond. I'm not disparaging anybody else's things of rape. I mean, people have gone through horrible things that I haven't gone through. But the mind trip with this thing is, it's just like, instead of swallowing a pill, it's trying to swallow one the size of the globe. And having to carry the mantle for, if the world falls apart according to people's belief systems, it's all on me. And I'm like, that's so crazy making. Does this make sense what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's just, but I'm on this side of it now, but having to process through all that has been really hard. No wonder it took me this long to get here. Okay, so it was very awkward, and I did not feel completely reassured 100% that she completely believed what she's hearing, but I hope that she did. But it was pretty awkward. And it was so hard to tell others what happened and feel their emotional response as one of their icons crashed to the ground, or to feel scrutinized as to whether I was crazy with such a story. And I told you about the David Letterman with the woman climbing through the bathroom window kind of thing I don't want to be compared to. This added to the trauma. I told my therapist, and I mentioned it to my physician, as my sleep and mood has been vastly disturbed since this incident. I have been seeing a specialized counselor, or I had been, referred to me by Portland Women's Crisis Center. That's another whole thing. I talked with a few friends as well. My alcohol work has been, I kept trying to work, and there was weird stuff that happened. I mentioned this to you, and I'll tell you more again. My alcohol work has been more stressful and frightening for me since this incident, even though before I've always very much enjoyed this aspect of my practice. I consulted with an attorney as this was so overwhelming, and I felt the need to understand my rights and choices in a private setting. Since all I have ever been interested in with this situation is stopping this from happening to others, I decided I was not interested in making any money from this case. I did not want to be labeled a gold digger like women in this situation are often labeled. I don't care about judgments for money and some army of lawyers fighting another army of lawyers. It would not bring back my pre-assault sense of peace and safety. I don't want to be bought off into silence. I only want justice. And having this ugly thing come out of the shadows and into the light where it cannot continue anymore, and for this man to be stopped from what he has been doing, which should have been done a long time ago. I know that I'm not the first woman to be assaulted by him. My guts told me that when I was struggling in the room with him, and I stand by it today. I hope the others will feel brave enough to come forward in spite of his public stature and army of lawyers. I even wonder who he may have already paid off to shut them up. I believe if someone had spoken up before, this would have not happened to me. And I feel like I must speak up to prevent, if I can, some other woman from going through what I went through or worse. He should not get a free pass merely because of his position. People in power are not to be given a license to behave in ways that the rest of us are not, to be above the law and to abuse women through criminal acts. Women like me and others out there in this world with their precious jobs, working and just doing their best, trying to make a living, keep a roof over their heads, and put bread on their tables. I want this behavior stopped, and I want people to know who he really is and what he's done. And this is not just my story, but this is a story of women in the world and how it is. I really think this is, and it needs to stop. Every time, I mean, I can understand a lot of people that don't want to speak up, but it's like, you know, all we have to do is look at the women who were victims of the jogger rapist. One comes forward, and they all come forward, and they have real names and real faces. And this is like, I would like my name to be protected because of this, but if it comes to the point where I have to go and have my name out there, I mean, after all this time, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I don't fucking care, you know? I had lawyers say to me, well, what about your reputation? I said, my reputation's fine. I'm not the one who's going around sexually assaulting people. I said, I'm not worried for my reputation. He should be worried for his. Makes me just pissed off rereading that.
Well, I'm glad you read it to us. It was very, very descriptive, and it included every emotion that you went through, and it was great.
I'm sorry it was long, but I wanted to put down all the details, because otherwise you get asked anyway, and that's the whole thing.
No,
much. But thank you for your patience, because I know that's an earful.
No, it was very all-inclusive, and that's just things that we need to hear. Now, as far as different details from different angles, I'm going to go back through some of my notes.
Understood.
And try to get a little bit more details as far as a picture goes in some of these. Can you tell me how the call-up list operates at the hotels?
How it did at the time?
Correct.
Because I can't tell you what goes on now, because I'm not a part of that world anymore.
Was it just chronological? Are you on the list with a group of other
business
sewers?
Cards and, you know, you, because you're cocaine graft to the concierge, and I think there's some massage there was doing a little more, you know. And I'm grandma. There's people there, and they're younger and young concierge, you know. That I know one guy, he was like really hoping to get a date with so and so, so you know, he started calling her. But there was, you know, this hotel liked me, I think, because I had really well, I would get good reviews from my guests, so that will bring you back to more because mm-hmm. people come down and say, that's great, I really had a good thing. I remember getting called, for example, to work on one of the lead singers for a group because he wanted an acupuncture, so I couldn't do acupuncture, but I had a background in Chinese medicine, so I could do acupressure skills.
Okay. So it's not a list?
Or social clique. No, and then there was this thing that started to develop before I left, but it was after this whole thing.
Okay. So at the time, it was not a list. It was just random and who they sought out
who
was
favorites?
Very professional.
Their
favorites were, regardless of... Now,
yeah, there's people who are not very professional and have like sick, weird things going on with some concierge, like,
okay.
You know, and they're
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about the different billing. Why don't you lay that out a little bit more clear? How are you normally billed?
Depends on the hotel. The Lucia, for example, would be like the guest pays you. They just pay you money right there.
Okay.
I charge X amount. How much I charge.
Okay.
You pay me. Hopefully you tip me.
Okay. And this is cash, or do you have a credit card slider?
Cash.
Cash only. Okay.
I have taken rare checks from people. And then other hotels, you cash out. The people could do a room charge if they didn't pay you directly, and then you cash out the front desk. Let's see. The Heathman would do that. The Benson would do that. I'm trying to remember if the Paramount did it. My memory's a little fuzzy.
Okay, so what percentage would you get paid cash by the customer?
For me, in the hotels I went to, most of them.
Okay, all right.
Most of them.
And so...
Gore did... He said... See, I'm remembering pieces. This still needs to be, like, there's a few... Like, he said, how much do I owe you reaching in? And I was like, nothing. It's the hotel's taking care of it. Because there was a big fight with the hotel I ended up with later. Or it's not a huge fight, but a fight. Where I said... because the hotel, Brandon had told me the hotel was taking care of it, quote, unquote. Well, they weren't. I thought they were giving him gratis, you know. They weren't. They had arranged with, because when I went the next day with it, I emailed first thing in the morning the right billing, you know, out of my program to email it. And like, he's already checked out. And I'm like, so? And they said, well, you know, his people already paid for this to us.
Okay, let me get this straight. So you went.
They were doing an unusual thing for him.
Okay, so you went. But did you go to their room assuming that he was going to pay you cash?
No, not normally I would with a client,
okay.
But not with him. They said the hotel was taking care of it, so that I, and they said, please, can you give us a billing? Because they were going to pay me at the
okay,
desk.
So you assumed that the hotel would be billing you for this and he would not.
They would be paying me for it.
Okay.
I would bill them.
You did not know if they would be paying it or he would be paying it, only that they would be getting billed.
I believed that they would be paying me, and I did not know...
That this was a perk for him?
Yeah, I thought it was a perk for him. They were giving him the way that they described it. I did not know that they were having... They did not define to me that they are arranging a specialized billing for his people through the hotel, and they
okay.
were going to do a room charge.
Okay.
That's what it turned out to be, was a room charge, but they didn't describe that to me.
Okay. All right. So... and then I'm going to go back real quick while it's fresh in my mind. You said that he was reaching into a pocket or something. What do I owe you? At what point was that in the room?
That was finally when I think I was like, and here getting my car. Well, I was finally could start rolling out the door.
Right.
And I said, no, that's okay. And as I'm getting to the door, you just have to turn, I have to pretend this is
okay.
The door. Getting to the door, and then he comes, and that's, you know, so I said, the hotel's taking care of it. And then, and that's when he grabs me, and then I'm in the doorway just like forever.
Right.
You know you
and you said that he was reaching in as if to pay you, and that was the
bathrobe? I thought he was grabbing, no. He, what the hell was he wearing at that point? I thought he was reaching in. just a second. This is a weird thing. No, he must have been reaching into something, clothing article that he was holding up. There was something that he was reaching into a pocket of, but he wasn't wearing it.
Okay.
Because he was still in his robe. Let me just double check. No, he didn't. I don't remember that he got dressed.
Okay.
Because, no, he couldn't have, because we would have been separated apart from each other's company, and we didn't. But there was something in his clothing. He had to have been holding, because he was holding up something. So I think he was holding up pants or a jacket or something.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Don't get offended, but...
Remember, I was trying to run out the door, so I'm just glancing.
Right. You inferred that maybe some of the other masseurs had little arrangements with
LMTs.
LMTs with the concierge, like they wanted to date them or something. Do you think that there were other LMTs that would provide sexual services that maybe someone inferred to someone incorrectly?
Say this, someone inferred to someone, be more definitive with that sentence.
Well, I don't know if it's details. if it's a known fact. It may be the concierge. Maybe someone from Gore's entourage asked something about, you know, can you get a massage upstairs or something? Do you think that the hotels...
Not, you know, the people that I worked with at the Lucia knew that I was very professional. They knew, they'd seen, because I had a very comprehensive, I didn't just do my business card. And I've given you my card now. Let me show you what my card looks like to give you a sense of this, because I think that'll help. But, and I'll give you a little more answers to that. Just a second, I have to dig for it. This is the kind of information that all of them had access to. See on the back?
Right, it lists all of your professional services.
Now, the deal is that at the Hotel Lucia, you know, I'm older than all the concierges. I don't act flirtatious. I'm very... Go ahead.
No, okay.
I'm very all about business.
Okay.
And they, you know, they said, can you come, like, the group is counting crows. We need an acupuncturist. You've
right.
got a background in Chinese medicine, you know. It's all very business. And they are always like, well, how was that? And, you know, they're...
Right.
So they really, we had a very professional relationship.
So they never would have called you, even if in the, you know, I'm just throwing this out there, that if someone from his party had requested... some kind of possible sexual service, they would have never said, ah.
Not those. I can't think of those concierges doing that at that hotel, number one. And if they were going to pick somebody, there is an element. I'm going to step over here. I keep worrying like, am I talking too long? No. This is okay. The last two massages I did in a hotel... For the last few, actually, there's one massage therapist where, you know, when I end up having to do doubles with people, and I would look at her and think, dressed like that, you know, but she had good technique. I'd watch her and stuff, but I'd think, why are you dressed like that? You know, I'd think, oh well, she's young, I'm grandma, you know, and eventually she was pregnant out to hear from the boyfriend that was doesn't want anything to do with her, who's in jail, great. And but she's still wearing really low-cut tops.
Okay.
And I'm like, you don't go around showing cleavage and stuff. But the bottom line was, I did a massage with her. I used to wonder, like, what are you doing? Her and one other. But I think, no. Of course, I've learned now to really listen to my intuition, because I'm picking up a lot. And we went to do one over in the Mallory, what's it called now? Hotel Deluxe, with the round bed, the room with the round bed. And it's the first time I got to massage in there. I thought, it's no big deal. I like my king size bed better. You can fall off the edge of that thing. But these people are like, we're in the round bedroom, you know, so you're doing a side by side couple. And this colleague of mine, she's wearing skin tight white pants with a black thong that I can see through her pants. And it's like, you know, like this, and I'm thinking, maybe she has a date afterwards, because that's whack. She's got poor taste.
Right.
But she had been garnering an enormous amount of work, and particularly down at the Benson, where she's like, you know, carrying on stuff. And she's the one who'd given birth and everything. So here she is, and then she gets a call at the end of the massage when we're washing hands, packing up, and she's like, and I said, oh, I said, because I thought, well, good, she's found romance after having her baby. And mm-hmm. And I said, oh, I said, you're going on dates? I got a new boyfriend? She goes, no, that's my next client. And I thought, oh, hell no. Well, she's talking about the room number, and I'm thinking, you don't talk to a client that way, unless you have a special kind of client.
So do you think that...
I think she might have been turning tricks, on, as well as doing massage.
Because I know that I have talked to other LMTs that get annoyed that there are women out there posing as being massage therapists that are really priced prostitutes.
But they're licensed.
Right.
And they're in the hotel industry.
Right.
Well, I'm furious because I looked and I said she bought a brand new, let's see, she had her baby on Oregon Health Plan. She bought a brand new constructed home in Vancouver. She bought a brand new car. It's a 3-bedroom home, everything, and all the clothes and the purses she had. And I'm like, you're at Saks and Nordstrom's? I'm like, oh, honey.
Okay, so there is that element in your... In your profession, unfortunately, but you are...
I never saw her do it.
Right.
And there's like several, out of the handful of us, there's like about this many maybe.
Okay.
I'm making a guess. So I'd say her, maybe this other one, and the others, no. No.
Okay.
I mean, I'd be really, there. You know, like... large, sweet women whose boyfriends come and hang out below as bodyguards, and somebody right. who's got it, yeah.
So that hasn't happened to you before? You said that you hadn't...
I remember I mentioned to you the other day, I had a creepy guy at the, it's now called the Hotel Monaco, the Fifth Avenue Suites, and that was my first time working there, so I was rushing in.
Right.
And because they had this big, weird parking hall downstairs and everything. And I'm rushing in, trying to do everything right. And I remember picking up something baby from the guy, but I was thinking it was about me being late. And he was the guy I had to argue because he kept wanting to have all the sheets off. And he had this, he didn't shout or anything. We had this silent smoldering of rage where every time I turned my back, all my hair was just like this. Right. And at that point, and that was quite a time before this event with Gore, I told myself, I will never go into a room without shaking the hand and looking in the eyes of who I'm going in there and make a decision.
Okay.
So I started doing that. And then the very last massages I did in the hotel, I ended up over at the Benson where this person, her name, I don't care if I say her name, because I'd like to see her popped. I would love to see her popped because this is just really messing stuff up. You know, she's going to go turn tricks. Do it in the genre of doing that. Don't get into our world, because then people like me get assaulted. But she, this is the hotel. She gets all her work out. It was the other one, I think, is turning tricks. And they're just like thicker than thieves and fight like jealous siblings. And they do stuff that's not. And I recently did talk to the board and say, I think you need to check this out.
Okay.
But I don't know if the board will, because they're incredibly incompetent, underfunded. But the bottom line was, I was in this hotel. I end up with this old man with a cane, who's richer than God, and he's wants a separate room. His wife's having a massage down there, and I'm in a separate room. And I'm thinking, whatever, rich people, they've got eccentricities. 90-minute massage. He mentioned sex 17 times in different shapes and formats. I just made it clear, not doing it. He goes, oh, well, you're a good girl. I said, that's right, I'm a good girl. He said, well, I respect that, you know. But I tried a couple more. I was just
right.
And I said, I've had enough. Push me away from the table. I'm done. Besides the fact that. Just a few days after the Gore thing in the Lucia, I got a guy, and he said, do you forget guys being inappropriate with you? And I mean, whatever it was, something like that, where he said, and I thought, well, who sent you?
Right. Okay, we're going to get back to this night, and...
I hope I'm trying to stay succinct, but this is all real emotional, so I have to go, wow.
Nope, you gotta get it out.
It's common.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question about the statement that you read. You mentioned that attorney had
originally written up a small, mishmashed, fucked-up statement.
Okay. Is that statement your statement?
This is my statement.
That's your statement.
I rewrote the whole... He can't write either. Okay. I'm sorry.
So that... I just want to clarify for the record that that statement was written by you and there was no other input.
I took and changed some stuff that he wrote. I kept in what I agreed with, put it more into my own language. I mean, the basic concepts of stuff, like, you know, this stuff about my education or about... something about the opinion of this business of ordering up a massage. So that was started to be his words, but I'm like, I agree completely with that. So it's mine too.
Okay.
You know, or that thing of like ordering up massage and turning into something kinky.
When you went up to the lobby, besides the lobby employees, were there any other witnesses or guards by the door when you went in?
No, when I went into the lobby, it's on the main floor, and I came back up from the bathroom. So, no, I didn't see any guards there. And when I went up there, I did have a conversation with him about security.
Okay.
I said, and that was in the bedroom, kind of being pinned down at some point in there, being stuck. Like, how long have you been crazy so far, basically, whacked out? I said, Don't y'all have Secret Service? Do you guys? Where's your Secret Service guys or something? I think I said it at that point. I know I said it to him, and he at some point in the room, and he said to me, "Oh, you know, Vice President, ex Vice Presidents don't get Secret Service." He says, "Nobody wants nobody wants to harm us or kill us. You know, like we're not worth it."
Okay.
But then he also said, although somebody recently had made some kind of a threat at his office, whatever it was, I saw it in the news. He told me what he said was true, that there had been something just...
Okay, so they didn't have any
there's nobody
private security outside of his room? You didn't see any people outside?
Well, this is the deal. Let's say this is the hallway, okay? Uh-huh. Here's his room here. There's the doors here and here. When I worked on lesser gods, like members of Hulk Hogan's family or whatever, they've got security in rooms around them just for people like that.
Okay.
Because I've ended up having to go in there to get paid from somebody else in one of the other rooms and stuff.
Okay, but you did not see anybody else. I'm just trying to ascertain.
No, I didn't visibly see anybody else. I saw every single door shut, everything looking completely silent, and not even the trays with the plates sitting out in the hallway.
Okay.
And I just said, what's going on behind all that? Something looked... Okay. It just vibed on it. No,
okay.
I didn't see anything.
All right.
To get the straight answer out of me. I saw nothing. I felt something.
Okay, so I'm going to try and break this up into the sexual encounters. So I'm going to try and give each one a number. So the first time that there was a confrontation where he raised his voice, you were massaging his stomach area. That was the first... the first act that he made sexual, when he grabbed your hand, placed it on his penis under the sheet?
No, he didn't place it on it. He placed it into the pubic crest area, and it's like if this is the penis, and that does look like...
Okay, so next to it. Your hand did touch it, and it was directed there by his hand.
I couldn't see it, but it sure felt like a penis to me.
Okay, but he put your hand deliberately under the sheet.
Yeah.
Down in his groin area, so that your hand was touching his penis.
So that my hand was in the pubic hair.
Okay. And how long do you think your hand was there? Long enough for you to redirect your hand. So he did not have your hand forcefully held there?
No.
Okay. Could you tell if he was erect or aroused at that time?
You know, men after a certain age, there's this idea of their erections, and they're not always...
Okay, so could you tell?
My sense was that he was aroused.
Okay.
He was aroused,
and your
to some
sense,
degree.
Was that your sense by touch or by sight?
By touch. He was not... Sheet-wise, there was not and we're taught in massage school that if, you know... a man is having an erection and it's visible with the sheets, you simply drape more sheets and more towels over to provide everybody a sense of
discretion.
Saving face.
Right. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. And to go back, when you told him to turn the lights back up, how did he respond to you when you asked him to?
It's okay with that. Because I said, I can't see what I'm doing. I was just like going, because that was a little bit weird.
Okay.
And but other people have done it. But I was thinking, I think at first my anxiety was like, God, people please this guy. There's so much pressure on me from the hotel, and oh my God, it's him. I live in the bizarre world of being operating without a clue about a lot of people. Like when I went in to work on the guy who was the lead singer for Counting Crows, I said, are you an athlete? I don't even know who the hell he was, and I had to look him up on the internet. And I don't follow sports, so when I'm working on NBA guys or something, I'm not impressed with people because I don't know who the hell they are. This guy, I knew who he was, so I was having to go. And the hotel staff had just been like this undulating waves, like, you're going to work on him. Ooh. And I was like, okay, I just need to go and say he's another client. Just stay calm.
Okay. You described after he had placed your hand down in his groin area that he then bellowed at you. Would you describe it as being kind of indignant that you were rebuffing his sexual advances?
I'm going back to this for a second here. Ask me that question again, please.
Well, when you said
just
that he bellowed at you,
yeah,
he kind of screamed at you after you pulled your hand away.
And he said, I'm not asking you to do anything inappropriate.
Right, right. Is there any?
When I told him that when I pulled did my hand away and I said that this is really not, I tried to talk him out of it.
Right.
So,
did you? There was no way that his actions by putting his hands down there, you were definite that was something sexual. It wasn't him.
This was no accident. Confusion on my part.
Okay.
This was obvious what he was doing.
And
it was after he began to make sexual moaning and groaning.
Right. And I was going to ask you about that. When he was making those sounds, they were sexual in nature, like he was becoming aroused?
Yeah. I don't hear other males that I'm working on do that. They make other sounds of release of like, because I just went, and a vertebrae popped in their back or something by accident, and we're like, it's more like the thank you, Jesus kind of sound. This is the sound that, I have been a married woman and a woman boyfriends, and I know the difference.
Okay. And his hands at that time when he was making these sounds, was he doing anything in particular with his hands then?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, I think he was just laying back and waiting for somebody else's hands to do something.
Okay.
You asked me something about the bellowing, was the way you first phrased the question, though, about...
Was he indignant because you had caught on that...
You know, I can't read his mind, but it felt that he was in... It felt more complex than that. Like, he's a real machinator of people. And, I think he was enraging at me at the same time saying he's not doing this, at the same time he is,
right,
to say we are going to adhere to my version of reality even though it's clearly not
okay
real. And that, I think that's got to be a perpetrator kind of thing.
Okay.
This is insidious. It's not...
Okay.
I mean, take that to any therapist's office and do that with somebody, and they just say, this person
right.
is manipulating, they're trying to intimidate, they're doing stuff, and they're doing crazy making with your head.
Right. How do you think he would have reacted?
I think he was testing me, because once he yelled at me, that's the weak spot. That was a weak spot, because then he would try these different things, but once he figured he could get me to do by
right.
screaming at me, because
right.
I would fold.
Right. How do you think he would have reacted at that juncture? Instead of redirecting your massage, had you said no, or you voiced the things that you told us, how do you think he would have responded to that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the man. I don't know. I'm not a historian of his behavior other than this experience. So you're asking me to make guesses, and I could be wrong.
Right.
So
okay.
I don't think that would be wise.
Nope. I was just.
I mean, you know, now I fantasize of just doing the thing of like throwing tissues at him. Like, in some cultures, it'd be my insult. And except I'm wearing clogs, and those could be like dangerous weapons. you know, if I had to speculate how he would, if I'd yelled no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we can see later on, I began to see by the experience that him, that if I fronted him off, that, I mean, he was such a violent, it was one of the most violent yellings.
Right, and you said that you'd never experienced that before. No one's ever yelled at you in that kind of situation.
Not in work.
Right.
But when I have encountered men doing that before, it's usually coupled with violence.
Sure.
It is a form of violence, and it's usually coupled with violence and force.
Okay.
You know, and I have experienced that, and I was like, holy shit.
Okay.
You know, this is dangerous. This is like people going nuts on the max, and you want to get off before they
beat
you up.
Right. Okay. You very skillfully calmed him down or redirected, and the pressure points you said were head, neck, and shoulder area. Is that?
Jin Shin Do?
Yeah, that.
It means the way of the compassionate spirit.
Excellent. So that was your kind of.
It's not just. It included areas, and but see, it's like you're starting into certain areas, you're going down, and there's.
But I want to know what areas. You said that you kind of wanted to get his mind away from where
it
was.
Right, but it's not just like, you have to understand, have you ever had acupuncture? Do you understand?
No, but what I'm trying to understand.